Hey, Adam.
Yes, Mike.
Life is winning.
Are you trying to tell me that you won the lottery and you're starting a All Japanese Wrestling Podcasting Network and I am going to be the star?
No, that would mean I and we winning. No, life just beating the living hell out of me today.
Oh, that's so life is beating you rather than you are winning at life is what you're trying to tell me today as we record this.
Oh, yeah. What I'm looking for today, and I'm not even going to lie to you, right off the jump, I know my name's on this broadcast and everything, but I'm looking for a hot tag.
Yes, this is, it's my fault. I'm trying to get Mike to record tonight at a reasonable time. Schedules aligning as they do or don't, but they're allowing us to record what will be a bit of a different show, a first in that... Mike, you are going to be with us in the first part of the show talking all about Stardom's two major shows at Sumo Hall this past weekend. And then my close, longtime personal friend, a co-host of Wrestling at Random, the other podcast that I do, and someone who did attend the New Japan Ring of Honor show with you and I, Mike, Jeremy Deamer, will join me for the second half of the show to talk about the New Japan Cup so you can get some sleep.
I heard he can get Cubs tickets.
But does he want them? That's the question. If you listen to the last episode of his Cubs podcast, Wrigleyville Nation, you can find out about everything surrounding the Chicago Cubs and how apparently here in Chicago we are running baseball teams like we are the Pittsburgh Pirates.
That's you know, you can't be in a city the size of Chicago, have the ownership you do, and look at the Mets, Dodgers, Padres, and everybody else, and decide I'm not going to spend. No, that's not how this works. No,
you got to buy a soccer club.
That's a
football club, if you will.
I need to buy time. Yeah, unfortunately, folks, yeah, this past weekend for me was busy here on the home front and overnights and all that sort of good
by
stuff.
By the home front, you mean GCW, right? You're the official hype man for GCW. That's what I've determined.
Well, apparently I must have missed my invitation to be in the clusterfuck battle royal like Sean Ross Sapp, apparently.
I thought you were going to say that you missed your invitation to go on tour with Pro Wrestling Noah joining Ninja Mac. Or are you Ninja Mac?
Well, you know, the plan was to actually have Ninja Mac on Wrestling Observer Live before he left. But I don't think unfortunately, that's not going to come to pass. But no, I am not Ninja Mac, nor am I his doppelganger kamikaze either.
Yeah. Speaking of Pro Wrestling Noah, and that's not something we're going to get into a ton right now, but it's kind of interesting how they're bringing in a ton of foreigners right now. Ninja Mac, a bunch of luchadors, Slex, Rene Dupree is coming back. Chris Ridgeway is coming back to the junior heavyweight division. I don't know if he is fully aware of what he's coming back to in that junior heavyweight division. But yeah, Pro Wrestling Noah, never a dull moment or quite often a dull moment. I don't know. Probably both.
And I guess in some cases, you know, congratulations to them for keeping their word for a lot of these guys that were supposed to go over the last, you know, at different points over the last 18 months, 2 years. And unfortunately, things had to be delayed and, you know, how things shook out, you know, thankfully for them, those guys are able to go back. So, again, these doors all opening and all of these walls falling, it's just going to be, again, may not be the greatest for health purposes at all times, but for wrestling fandom, it's fantastic.
It is. I do want to mention, and then we'll transition nicely as professional podcasters into Stardom. Maybe the attendance note associated with Pro Wrestling Noah that I was most amused about over the past couple months is that fateful night on February 23rd, Nagoya Congress Center Event Hall, where Kazuyuki Fujita defeated Katsuhiko Nakajima to win the GHE heavyweight title. I've written about that. We've talked about that. Not a great choice. They drew 643 fans for that show. 1 month later, Stardom, the last show before their two big Sumo Hall shows, this was last week, March 21st, drew just 50 less fans. So almost the same attendance for a show main evented by Thekla defending against Ruaka for the SWA Undisputed Women's title. So Kind of gives you a sense of where both companies are right now, that the attendance was that close for that match versus a major GHC heavyweight title match. I guess just a sign of the times. But that's where we are. I do want to mention also, I don't know if you saw the attendance for the Noah show, the last Noah, big Noah show with Fujita defending against Masato Tanaka. It also did not break the 700 barrier.
Well, this is what it is right now. And
they can't be on Christian Broadcasting Network for a TV deal. They are not the 700 Club.
Not doing Fort Worth TV, the slowest 2 hours of TV on Mondays.
No. Pat Robertson is not taking over booking Noah from Nosawa Rangai. Thankfully, I guess.
You know, during the pandemic, Stardom obviously was heavily affected, but they were able to continue to serve their fan base and continue to make ripples and waves in a very tough space in during that time. And it looks as though with things starting to relax and things starting to fall, obviously New Japan, companies like that are going to get a bulk of the attention, but I have a feeling Stardom is just going to keep chugging along, continuing to say, probably surprise some people as far as the attention that they get. But when you have a roster like that and you're doing as well as you can, you know, a lot of the attention is going to fall to other people because of the big names that are going to be going in and out on the men's scene. But I mean, my gosh, Stardom looks like they're going to continue to trend up as well, too, and continue to really carve out their ground.
Well, yeah. And I just quickly, you mentioned, as far as the men's side in New Japan and wrestlers going back and forth, to me, it's going to be one of the most interesting things to watch over the next few months when, as we talked about, you see Pro Wrestling Noah bringing in a lot of foreigners. So that's opening up clearly on their end. New Japan, we've talked about, the reason guys aren't coming in is because of the pandemic. Well, that's true. But if you look at the upcoming talent list for New Japan Strong tapings or, big New Japan shows like are taking place in Chicago in a few weeks or in May out by your neck of the woods in Washington, D.C., a lot of these top foreigners are continuing to be booked on the U.S. shows, whether it be a Will Ospreay or a Jay White or, Finn Juice or Team Filthy, all these guys, some of them that have already obviously been to Japan quite a bit or guys that you'd be thinking when they're going to open back up, well, they'll be there. With the ambitious schedule that they're running on the U.S. side, we might not be seeing those guys come back as often as we thought to Japan, even if it does open up.
I'm feeling pretty lucky.
Yeah, I am jealous. The New Japan schedule, and I'll mention that with Jeremy in a little bit as well. Not to look a gift horse in the mouth. I'm thrilled about what we're getting in Chicago, but with it falling like 2 days before a new tour starts and on the same day as that big Cork and Hall 60th anniversary show, there's not a lot of Japanese talent available for Chicago. Whereas in DC, you guys are getting a wing of the Hall of Fame.
Really? I mean, the entire heavyweight division is going to be over and some of those guys are already going to be working in this country as it is. So, it's going to be
Okada and Tanahashi. I'm jealous.
And Jay White not announced, but it's hard to believe that he won't be showing up there. Filthy obviously is going to be on that show. So I am, and keep an eye out. I know, I think, is that West Coast Pro that weekend? I'm pretty sure there are people that are already kind of announced it and being put in position. So no matter where you are, even though, DC is going to get the attention that weekend there, pay attention to your local indies and some of the bigger indies out there because your Ishii's and your Suzuki's and guys like that. I mean, look, if a promoter can afford them, I'm sure they're going to try to extend an olive branch and get some of these guys on their shows. Why wouldn't you?
Yeah, I know. To that point, I think the Friday night, the night before the show in Chicago on April 16th, I believe that Friday for West Coast Pro, Yuji Nagata is going to be on their show. So that's, another example of sort of piggybacking off of that.
People are coming in. It's like Miyu Yamashita and
Maki Ito in May.
And they were announced for May. And that's the thing is there are so much going on. There are so many people kind of coming and going and there's so many shows running. I got to get a better handle on the schedule here. I don't even have a good handle on WrestleMania weekend here coming up with all the shows that are running and taking place. I don't even have a really good handle on that this year other than whoever's got Speedball Mike Bailey is probably going to get my eyes first.
Well, talk about a match that I'm fired up for. I believe it's Thursday night, so not that long after people will be listening to this. It is in Bloodsport, Speedball Mike Bailey against Yuya Uemura. My God. So that's just one example of the craziness that's going on throughout WrestleMania weekend. But yeah, you mentioned Yamashita and Ito are going to be coming in for that weekend in like, what, the third week of May for Prestige. And then you wonder, with the announcement of the relationship between AEW and DDT / Tokyo Joshi Pro, if maybe we will see one or both of them in AEW around that time frame. I mean, we already heard that it's a done deal that, once we get a little bit deeper into April, transitioning out of March, that Kanosuke Takeshita is going to be spending an extended period of time in AEW after dropping the KOD title to Tetsuya Endo last weekend.
Things are good right now. You know, we don't know how things are going to go, but like, you know, Terminus being linked in with AEW, being linked in with ROH, being linked, you know, all of these tentacles, and granted, a lot of them, some in some ways come back to Tony Khan and come back to AEW. But again, regardless of that,
just don't do an interview with Ariel Helwani.
Just
damn it.
If you still have 643 days to go on your contract, apparently.
Yeah, time's ticking down, I guess. It's almost
being worked by this, for heaven's sakes.
Oh, God.
MJF and Tony Khan had a real discussion over what took place. Will you guys all stop?
A near physical altercation.
I just feel like
I'm called. I got my parents' permission. What's that?
And they're both patting each other on the back.
Oh, yeah. No, it's Barry Horowitz Appreciation Society going on. Meanwhile, like, when I hear these stories, I feel like I've just asked my parents' permission and I've just dialed 1-900-909-9900.
With Mean Gene kind of drawing it out for you, so you can really, you're not just going to spend that $2 for the first minute. You're going to have plenty of 49-cent additional minutes.
Absolutely. The only thing, you talked about all the great things happening as far as, you know, wrestlers from Japan coming over to the U.S. Now we just need that elusive, long-promised, even though it was never officially announced, Stardom Tour of the United States. It's got to happen at some point. Whether it's a full tour, whether, you know, it somehow ends up being, you know, something in combination with New Japan, as it probably is a little bit easier to do that in the States than it is in Japan. But, you know, to your point a few minutes ago, the momentum continues to grow. It's not ebbing at all. Attendance at Sumo Hall this past weekend on the 26th, 2,700 people, which is about 500 less than they drew in December. And then they follow that up the next night, drawing a little bit over 3,000 people. Let me pull up the exact total number here. So Stardom drew 3,085 people at Sumo Hall this past Sunday, March 27th. Meanwhile, New Japan drew, I believe, somewhere in the 2,900 range for day two of, or I should say the final day, the finals night of the New Japan Cup. So even though they're in different cities, different arenas, obviously two major cities, who would have thought you would see the day where a major Stardom show outdrew the finals of the New Japan Cup?
Yeah, wouldn't have bet it.
At 2,987, so it was around 100 people more in at Sumo Hall for Stardom than in Osaka Jo Hall on the second night of that weekend for the New Japan Cup final.
Well, one product is, you could say, is kind of tired, and the other one's not. And again, Stardom's fan base is pretty energized, I assume. You know, per head, the amount of merchandise sold at those shows was probably pretty good. Creatively, they're humming. You know, they have stars. Kari, you know, and we'll get to her, how long she'll be out for, but, you know, her coming back, it's just, it is a very solid good time right now. And boy, you know, you take Donna Del Mondo on an American tour, you can rotate people in and out. I hope they go in that direction. I don't know whether it's feasible for them cost-wise. I don't know if Rossi is down with that, you know, obviously, because you know, you're looking at your product as being tunnel visioned on it as being the number one there, and you don't, you know, hey, why do I want to see Tam or whoever, you know, be third or fourth, fifth down the roster on a show just because there's all these other stars on it. But I hope there's a way it can work. And I hope we see a proper, honest Stardom tour come at some point. It's almost impossible for a Tokyo Joshi Pro to come over and do something like that without having a DDT, without having a group. But I think if done properly and you find the right sponsors and you maneuver this thing in the right way, you might be able to pull off an 8 or a 10 city Stardom tour. I mean, it's a lot to ask for. You know, you probably start with only a weekend, but you know, I think I could be dead ass wrong, but I think that's something that's feasible.
Yeah. I mean, I think that the 8 to 10 city tour thing would be pretty ambitious. And the other issue would be, you know, you're sort of abandoning your Japanese audience for an extended period of time at this point. But I think, you know, a weekend of shows, I think that, you know, and obviously we have no information, this is just completely speculating, but when you look at where WrestleMania is next year, like that's Los Angeles, correct?
Yes, it is.
I could see a scenario where it would sure as hell make a whole lot of sense to have as part of that weekend, you know, a big New Japan show. And I'm talking big, I mean, like, you know, the biggest show they've run in the U.S. since Madison Square Garden. And then also having as part of that weekend, you know, I mean, it's a Friday, Saturday deal, you know, having a Stardom show. You know, that just, it, I can't fathom that Bushiroad, New Japan, and maybe even by extension Stardom aren't going to want to make one of the biggest splashes they've ever made in the U.S. on that WrestleMania weekend. It just in Los Angeles, it just makes too much sense in too many different ways.
Oh my God, yeah, and we'll get into that more as time ticks on, because yeah, as you mentioned, there's a zillion and one reasons, not the least of which is that little dojo that seems to be turning out some pretty good people.
Oh yeah, yeah, absolutely. The LA Dojo, by the way, I don't know if you saw. There are LA Dojo tracksuits available at the Tokon shop. Now, I am not going to do it. Got a New Japan tracksuit last year. Finally bit the bullet and got it. But man, these are they're pretty nice. Pretty nice.
Got to order a size up in these too, much like you'd be ordering from Japan.
Yeah, for sure. And it's a little like you've almost got to determine what is more important to you, the pants fitting or the jacket fitting. Because one is going to be too big usually. Like Basically, I ordered a size to end up getting a jacket that fits well. The pants are a little big, but, you know, it is what it is. It's, you know, you got to have it at some point. I had only waited like 30 years, so I finally pulled the trigger on it.
At some point, I got to get one. I got to get the traditional line on the back, the sole on the front, just the... just that. That would make me happy. Although a little DDM gear wouldn't hurt my feelings. Although I don't know, me walking around at my age and my size in a Donna Del Mondo, I think the authorities might be out for that one.
I am dying for more Starlight Kid gear to go on to Tokon shop. So let's actually start there talking about the Stardom shows. And when I say Starlight Kid, I mean to connect it back to Kairi / Kairi Sane / Kairi Hojo, whatever you want to call her. Those obviously weren't the opening matches on these two shows, but they were the matches that drew the most attention internationally and potentially in Japan as well. What did you think about, you know, the tag match on night one, you know, the match with Starlight Kid on night two? Obviously, there's the news of the ruptured or torn eardrum that she sustained in the match with Starlight Kid that, you know, clearly is going to keep her on the shelf for a little bit. I don't know how much it'll necessarily impact plans in that she's not in the upcoming Cinderella tournament. So it's not like she was going to be coming right back and wrestling again next week.
Did you know when she did it or did you find out after the fact?
No, I mean, it seemed like something might have been up, but I did not draw the conclusion that it was an ear and that it was that serious. I need to go back and watch the match to see if I can kind of figure out where that it was at. I would imagine it would be during when they were trading slaps, you know, that's,
yeah, and that's when I think it happened too. But that's the amazing part is I didn't realize it until afterwards and the news coming out that she was hurt, because you never would have known.
No. And then she did the post show promo. She came out and led with Saya Kamatani and Shuri, you know, the We Are Stardom closing of the show where Shuri wasn't quite sure what to do. But you would have not, you know, you wouldn't have even guessed there that she was hurt. So she was a pro and a trooper throughout, which isn't all that surprising.
No, not at all. And it did make me, you know, at the end when she did deliver the elbow, you know, she's up there. And in hindsight, you go back and like she kind of rocks for a second on the top rope, kind of getting it. It's like, I can't imagine, one, the pain, and then to try to keep your equilibrium. And she it wasn't Jeff Hardy, but she landed like a ton of bricks on Starlight. And whether that was a receipt or whether that was just look. It was either that or, you know, I had to get somewhere near you. And that was going to be the best way to do it. But just a trooper there. And I just, again, a really, really good match. And I thought her and Mayu against Cosmic Angels, I just thought that was really fun. I think it was a nice extension, you know, of everything they did at the press conference and Sayaka wanting to stick her nose in it. And, you know, Nakano just kind of dragging her back a little bit. And I don't know. Young girl,
yeah.
Let me step up for this. I thought it was a great way to come back. I really, really did. You know, injury aside, Starlight. You know, I'm sure some people are going, well, why wasn't Julia? Why wasn't Utami? Why? Because Starlight's going to be the one on the rise, and you want Kari to be there and have this legend coming back and to help shine her up a little bit. And I thought both matches were really, really good, and I thought they accomplished what they needed to.
Yeah, I would agree completely. The tag match was. Which again, it was Mayu Iwatani and Kairi taking on Tam Nakano and Unagi Sayaka. I mean, it wasn't great. It wasn't. I'm not going to say it was anywhere near a match of the year or anything, but it was exactly what it needed to be. It sort of was a kind of a soft landing, a good launching pad for Kairi to get back into the swing of things. You know, just wrestling, not just wrestling in Japan, but it's been a while, and obviously her injury or her concussion issues were well documented. And so it was a good way for her to be able to sort of ease back in the dynamic with her and Iwatani. It was great. And then, yeah, you fast forward to the match on the second night. And I mean, just the entrances alone, like I was trying to think of a recent show in Japan where you had two people that came off as, you know, as big of stars as both of them did, you know, the new music for Kairi. The entrance, particularly on the second night with the other people out there with her and, you know, the wheel and the robe, just the whole thing. And then Starlight Kid, we've talked about a little bit here on the podcast. I've written about it quite a bit. Three Count Fall newsletter that to me, Starlight Kid is, well, she's her own wrestler and has her own, you know, her own style, all of that. She is to me, the next iteration of, or the closest we've gotten to in terms of physical charisma, Jushin Thunder Liger.
Hmm.
Just the way everything she does, the way she moves, it all sort of has purpose. She moves in a way that's different from everyone else. It's just like Liger where, you know, you're wearing a mask, you're nearly covered head to toe, and what's that?
You can still emote.
Yeah. Not only can you still emote, but you emote and show more through those movements and just your eyes than most wrestlers do that are unmasked. It's remarkable. And I just think the sky is the limit for her, and her being put in this match is another, you know, it's another indication of how, you know, how strongly they view her future in the company. And I don't know. I haven't thankfully seen anyone grumble about her losing. She will get her win back at some point, and it will be incredible when it happens. You know, they've done a great job of making her one of the top wrestlers, and, you know, a merch seller, a draw, all those sorts of things, while also not pulling the trigger too quickly on making her a main eventer to where, you know, like 2-3 years from now, it's going to be, you know, well, what else do you do with her? She's already held every title. Like, clearly they see her as being one of the people that's going to be at the top of the company for the next 10 years. And that's why they're not giving her everything right away. You know, even if she did win the tag titles with Watanabe on night one.
Well, that's the thing too. Like you mentioned, you know, that was what I was going to bring up is, you know, they did give her something this weekend, which was obviously teaming with Momo and winning the tag titles. And it'll be interesting to see how long they decide to go in that direction with them as a team holding on to those titles and how that plays itself out. So,
yeah, and I believe only their second or third match as a team, they won the tag team titles. And that, you know, as we sort of just hop, skip and jump around the shows, I thought that was one of the best matches of the entire weekend, that being Momo Watanabe and Starlight Kid defeating Hizuki and Koguma for the tag team titles.
Now, I got to ask you, though, as good as that match was for you personally, because I believe that was a better match than the one that was before it. But you, Adam Summers, as a fan, what did you like more? Did you like the tag title match more, or did you like Prominence and Micah and Thecla?
Oh, the tag title match for sure. The Prominence match was super fun. particularly the it's hard to say. Yes, I think as a match, the tag title match was better. But man, Suzu Suzuki in particular, we talk about people that, you know, came out as even bigger stars this weekend. And we know, you know, she was, you know, the ace of Ice Ribbon at a very young age, then left the whole Prominence deal, which is still sort of in the formational times. But man, her in the ring with Thecla, I don't know that Suzu wants to not be a deathmatch wrestler. Like, we know that's a big part of the reason why, you know, on top of other reasons why, you know, she left Ice Ribbon, why they're starting the Prominence group, and they're going to be doing a lot of those sorts of things. But man, just in straight matches, she is top tier.
She's 19 years old.
And which is insane that we're talking about her as an ace of a company that left and started another group, and she's 19.
I look at people on the indies here of that age who have that mentality right now, and it's like, you know what? Just please, I hope your body holds up, because at some point you're going to have a long career doing different style matches. And I mean, she's a star. She's a star for Stardom. And, you know, anybody can wear the Cinderella dress. I know this, but she's one of those people, I can't see ever wearing the Cinderella dress, and I don't want her to wear the Cinderella dress.
That might be why it would be so great if she was ever in the tournament. Yes.
So it's like, you know, she's just going to be one of those grinders, like, you know, like Micah and like those types of women that, again, her ascension and watching her continue to develop is going to be really awesome, because, again, with a Kyrie coming back, with all of, you forget how much, and again, not anybody listening to this show, but I think in general, it's like you hear the name Tam Nakano forever now. You hear the name Mayu Iwatani forever now. And they're not that old, but you think about
early 30s. Yeah. Or right around 30 with Mayu and early 30s for Tam.
Yes. So it's like for them to be able to lay this path for those women, you know, every single one of them, Risa, Sarah, all of them that are on, you know, coming up and that will be coming up. I mean, it's hard. Again, it's hard to say that the sky's not the limit for, again, at least inside Stardom. It's difficult to believe that there's not going to be this group that came in. Thecla, I'm watching and I'm thinking to myself, like, you know, it's going to be hard for her to kind of crack, and she can always get a main event, her relationship with Julia. There's always a place that as she comes along that she may be able to fit into. But she's like, I'm already thinking of her as like the Arn Anderson, where it's like she has the ability to be there forever and be really good for a really long time and to get better. And she'll still never probably bust through that, you know, the glass at the top, because they're just so damn loaded.
Well, yeah, no, for sure. I mean, she has charisma for days. Like, she just stands out so much just as a character
too. And it's just, she's got a very, and it's like, she's grown on me more and more. And the more I watch her, it's like,
are you talking about Thecla? You cut out for a second.
It's like, you know, I really, the more I watch her, the more I enjoy seeing her work.
Yeah, absolutely. You talk about other people, and you said with Starlight Kid, people that have a completely unique way of moving. Thecla is one of those people that if you stuck like a potato sack over her and you couldn't see anything, you couldn't see her face, you couldn't see any different gear, you would know immediately it was her just by the way she moves. You know, we've talked about before that back in the day when the wrestling that we grew up on, you know, wrestling was rich with those people, whether it be a Barry Windham or a Great Muda or an Arn Anderson or a Brad Armstrong. Like, you know, people just had unique ways of moving. She's one of those people. You talked about Suzu Suzuki, you know, and Prominence, and you know, that was sort of one of the other underlying things here that when I watch this show, you can't help but think, and I'm not even saying it in a predatory way, but when you look at Stardom and how many wrestlers they've picked up, you know, whether it be wrestlers from, you know, from companies like Actress that have, you know, mostly gone by the wayside, or just, you know, getting wrestlers from all across the landscape. When you see a Suzu Suzuki just looking like such a star and wrestling at such a high level, in both matches this weekend, or when you look at the Battle Royal, which was otherwise, I mean, not the best action of the weekend and was long, 25 minutes, 24 seconds. But when you see Mei Suruga coming out of that Battle Royal and then, challenging Izumi later on that night after Izumi defeated Koguma and Natsupoi in that high speed three way. Like, you just can't help but wonder, are any of these people that we see, you know, appearing here and there in Stardom, are they going to be the next people that it's like, oh, they show up at Korakuen and they're the next big signing?
Well, see, you know, you're not going to be able to hold on to everybody. It's going to be interesting, too. You know, it's like Hanan's, you know, a teenager. Mirai is in her, you know, 20. It's just, man, yeah, it's going to be interesting seeing how many people. And
how deep can you make the roster before you start to worry, that it's like an AEW situation where there's not enough room for everybody? I don't think they're there yet, but no, it's a valid point.
And the negative of success is it's like free agency in sports. At some point you start losing people, and sometimes too. And, you know, the bright shine of AEW, you know, to call somebody over or something, you know, it's interesting because you look at Julia and you go, I could make $1 million with Julia in North America and in the UK. I could take Suri right now. I can make, you know, $1 million with Suri. It's like, you know, it'll be interesting to see down the line too, some of those names that, you know, again, if I'm an American company and I look at that roster, I salivate over somebody like a Natsupoi and somebody,
that's, you know, that's just the one that I was going to bring up, that if WWE was in the mode that they were in, you know, a year or two ago, as far as aggressively scouting and trying to sign people from Japan, particularly with Kairi leaving, she's the one that I would have been terrified from, just a, you know, a Stardom fan standpoint, or from a total non-WWE standpoint of just, or non-WWE fan standpoint, I would be terrified that they would pick her up, because to me, she's, of everyone in the company, she's the one that I could just see porting over so ridiculously well. There's several, like you mentioned, but she'd be the one I'd be most concerned about losing.
Well, the good news there is, though, then they take a look at Cosmic Angels and see Shirakawa and Unagi and just go, maybe we'll take them.
Yeah. which would
hurt my feelings, but you know, that's something WWE would do in this day and age with what they're looking for, and for people like Izumi and people like that.
Yeah, it would be the preferred thing for sure if they lost anyone, you know, that they weren't losing, you know, the Izumis or Natsupois of the world. But losing, you know, all kidding aside, losing someone like Unagi or Mina Shirakawa would be a big loss for Stardom at this point, because when you look at, you know, most popular wrestler rankings in Japan, they ranked a lot higher than I think a lot of people would have expected, you know. And I Mina Shirakawa, I think, has improved. I still nowhere near as high on Unagi Sayaka in ring as some other people are. She's a great character, and I don't think that, you know, there isn't a spot for her. I don't see her as a big singles title contender, but it would be a loss.
Yeah, and this is the Stardom is just so great right now, because you got to have the idols like that. You know, there's got to be levels to everybody, but that's the thing. They're so loaded where it's like you can have, you know, if this is some goofiness over here, you have your high speed over here. You have, you know, Saya and Nakano, I guess if you held a gun to my head, I would say that was the best match.
Absolutely. That's my match of the weekend for sure.
But I really like Suri and Julia.
I wanted to like it more than I did. I need to go back and watch it again. I liked it, but I think where I'm at with Suri as champion, and it's weird because I'm going to compare it to someone who's one of my favorite wrestlers, and then it's going to sound negative when I talk about it, but Suri to me is very similar to Katsuhiko Nakajima as a champion, and not just in the sense that they are maybe the hardest, most technically proficient kickers in pro wrestling, but stylistically, their title matches are not, you know, you think about, like an Okada or, you know, a Saya Kamatani or, you know, a Mayu Iwatani or, you know, even, you know, you think about Tam Nakano's reign, both with Suri and with Katsuhiko Nakajima, they don't build to dramatic, like really exciting finishes. It's an accumulation of damage and then they win. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. Like if you go back and watch a lot of classic old All Japan, you know, Triple Crown matches, that's how they end. You know, it's just someone hits three bombs and then they get the win. But to me, just when you compare that to some, you know, the embarrassment of riches that we've had really over the past 10 days, whether it be in Stardom or Tokyo Joshi Pro or, you know, DDT or even obviously New Japan or even Noah, not so much with Fujita versus Tanaka, but the Cork and Hall match with Nakajima and Shiozaki. You know, I didn't think this guy, either of Shuri's matches this weekend got quite to that level.
I thought with Julia, I liked the grappling at the beginning with them going back and forth with each other and them going out of the ring and how they went out of the ring that way and how it built up. And I know what you're saying. Like I said, too, you know, if you had to pick one match from the weekend that you had to prop up, that I had to prop up, I think it is Kamitani and Nakano. But again, for me personally, I just thought that their dynamic, how well they play off of each other, I thought it was really, for me personally, that was my favorite match. But again, I think the match of the weekend was still, and even look, in Kamitani and Hayashida, I don't
want. It was great, too.
It was great. It's how something can be great, yet a little disappointing at the same time. And it's like, well, what was disappointing about it? I don't know. I can't tell you. I just know that they can do three steps ahead of that one. You know what I'm saying? It was a really good match, but it's like, there was still a whole lot left on the table.
I think part of it is, and it's weird. And I don't want this to sound negative because it's not like Saya Kamitani is having a great start to her reign. And she's also going to be so much better 3 years from now than she is right now.
Oh, that's fair.
And it's not a criticism because you look at where she was right before the pandemic hit, again, just whatever, a year and a half into her career. And I would have, you know, if you just took her from that point and said, all right, a year later, she's going to be doing, you know, big show main events, you'd have never believed it. She was not very good at all. And again, very, very, you know, early on in her career. But I think part of both with the match with Hayashishida and the match with Nakano, but particularly the match with Hayashishida, like as I'm watching it, I'm pretty sure Kamitani is going to win. I know that the story they're telling with her, you know, in her first reign, you know, requires and rightfully so her to win. But Hayashishida, when I watch her, she's so good right now. It's almost like I wrote about in Three Count Fall last weekend with Konosuke Takeshita that the only criticism I have of them is that they're so good at everything that it's almost not believable to ever see them lose. Like Takeshita in DDT is he's got the size. He's got the power. He has unbelievable athleticism for his size. He's a better high flyer than almost every cruiserweight, you know, junior heavyweight in the world. He's got a great look, all of that. You know, it's the same thing with Hayashishida, not necessarily the high flying, but everything else, it's, you know, it's weird seeing her lose a match like that, even though you know that's the direction it's going.
Probably a long way away from Kamitani losing that title, considering she only picked it up at the, you know, end of last year. But who do you think takes the belt off of her? Do you have Hayashishida, you know, 6 months, a year, 18 months from now, be that person? Or do you just kind of see how it goes? I mean, Julia, you're not going to keep her out of the picture for too terribly long out of somebody's picture. So, you know, to me, I mean, it wouldn't be the worst idea in the world.
Yeah, it's a tough one. I was actually wondering that, too, by the end of the weekend after seeing her beat Nakano and Hayashishida, because, you know, she beat Natsupoi last month as well. I do almost wonder, though, if whoever she loses to, if it's going to be another wrestler on the rise, you know, kind of similar to how she has been, rather than, you know, losing to a veteran that she's already beaten. You know, depending on how long she holds the title, maybe she eventually drops it to Izumi. The one that I could see happening, and, you know, I'm hoping that they're finally getting behind the person that I'm going to talk about, because it's been, you know, it's been long overdue in recent years that they do it. And I think she's at the top of her game right now. My vote would be Momo Watanabe.
Yeah. Great call there.
she, I thought she, you know, we talk about people who had, you know, great weekends. I thought she had a fantastic weekend. Obviously, the tag title match that we talked about, you know, I just thought, you know, she was great in that. The change to, it's one of the other crazy things when you look at Oedo Tai this time last year compared to now. And when they did the whole storyline with Starlight Kid being forced to join, you know, I think a lot of people, myself included, were like, well, wow, this is going to be kind of interesting. This is a big risk. Starlight Kid is one of the best natural baby faces in the world, just as far as, you know, just her style and just the whole deal. And that has worked spectacularly. I don't think anyone could have dreamed that it would work as well as it has. And then now with Watanabe, the same thing. It's, you know, she's kind of just spinning her wheels for the last couple of years. And part of that might just be due to where, you know, what the push was. But man, just the entire presentation now just screams top level star. And obviously there's the tag title reign that she's got with Starlight Kid. But man, I am ready for a big match, a big run with her between that. Really like the match with her and Hazuki on night two. So yeah, that would be my vote to take the white belt eventually.
Well, she came up short last year, Grand Prix, you know,
as an injury. I mean, really as an injury replacement, even though it wasn't announced as such, like she wasn't making that final if Julia was healthy.
And she, you know, you can play that into the story.
Yeah.
You know, and that's it's like, again, she's like 22. She's
been
for 74 years. She's 22 or 23 years old.
It's the same thing with Hayes Yoshida. It's crazy that they're like, when you run down the roster, Izumi is what, 19 going on 20. Same thing for Starlight Kid. Hayes Yoshida and Watanabe are right in that like 22 range, you know, it's wild. And then you mentioned someone else who I wanted to bring up a little bit just because of her back-to-back Future of Stardom defenses earlier, I guess openers on both shows. Hanan is another one who, you know, at 17 years old, you know, it's clear that, you know, they're starting to push her more. She's got the Future title. She's, you know, opening up her repertoire quite a bit, but I get the sense that like the moment she hits, you know, 18, they're going to go all out pushing her. Like I have a feeling that but her 18 to 19 year, I think we're going to see her get a big push, and even bigger than, let's say, Izumi did from that 18 to 19 year.
I just got to hope Yoniyama holds on. I mean, as long as Fukigen Death is around, I have somebody I can relate to age-wise.
And personal habits wise, she likes to smoke a little bit during the match. All I know is when I'm talking about wrestlers putting their hands in pockets, Fukigen Geth is many times ahead Orange Cassidy.
Oh man. You know, I know I got to end up getting out of here and getting some sleep, but
before you do, can we talk about one other wrestler? Can I trouble you to talk about one other wrestler from this weekend?
Oh, believe me. Look, I wanted to at least also hype up the fact that they did come out with the Cinderella pairings as well, too.
Yes.
And all the announcements for that. But yeah, go ahead.
The wrestler that, again, you know, everyone who listens or reads Three Count Fall knows I am 100% in the tank for, and was so excited when she made the jump from Tokyo Joshi Pro to Stardom, just like the year before Natsupoi did. But I thought Mirai had a tremendous, tremendous weekend.
Okay.
What did you? I loved the match with Saya Iida. That, honestly, that match from the second match on night one was one of my favorite matches of the entire weekend.
Well, I can't say anything about that one because I didn't see it yet, unfortunately.
Ah,
no,
it was
no.
For the amount of time they had, which is just over 10 minutes. I thought it was fantastic. As close to great as you can get without really going into my great tier. But really like a 10 minute never open weight title match would be the way I would describe it. Just hard hitting. A crazy lariat duel, Mirai countering the brainbuster into a sort of like a key lock from the guard for the submission. The crowd is starting to really get into Mirai, sort of clapping along to her music as she came out. So yeah, I thought that was awesome. And then followed it up the next night with a great match against Utami Hayashishida, third from the bottom, I guess you could say, third match on the card as well.
on the first night, I didn't get a chance to see the Gauntlet four-way either. What did you think about, you know, ultimately, I guess DDM won the thing. What did you, was that?
It was fine. I mean, it was better than the Battle Royal, but it was just, it was a match to get everybody on the card.
Okay.
I mean, it's not bad. There's very few things in Stardom these days that are, but it was, you know, there wasn't really a whole lot to it that really, you know, that really did a whole lot for me. I mean, it was fine. The most noteworthy thing was that it looks like Natsupoi is going to get another shot at the high speed title, this time against Izumi. She sort of was calling out for that. But as I mentioned, that's going to have to wait because it looks like we're going to get Izumi versus Mei Sarugo, which when you talk about matches to look forward to, that's going to be off the charts. High speed, you know, obviously Izumi, maybe the best in the world at that right now. And then Mei Sarugo, like that's going to be incredible.
Have you figured out a way to get Yuki Arai into Stardom yet, too?
Yeah, I mean, that's the other thing. I mean, I know we don't have a ton of time to talk about other stuff here with you, but man, the Tokyo Joshi Pro Show the previous weekend, you talk about in that same building, you know, for TJPW, a great attendance by their standards as well. They drew a little over 1,700, which, while that's nowhere near even halfway filling that building, that's their biggest crowd to date, and doing that, you know, for the most part, you know, on the backs of their regular wrestlers was extremely impressive.
Well, Adam, I hate to say this,
you're going to have to tag out. It's going to be the it's almost a listeners of the big or of the Wrestling at Random podcast will know this reference. It's almost been a Marty Jannetty AWA 1987 level build to this hot tag that you're about to make, but you're going to tag Jeremy in for the rest of the show as we talk a little bit of New Japan Cup.
I feel so shamed. I apologize to everybody out there. I'm in the midst of a bunch of overnights. I didn't get any sleep today, and it's one of those things. And I already hit somebody off at work and told them I'll be about 20 minutes late tonight, too. So
sorry.
I promise to do better the next time. I will never complain about recording at 3:30 in the morning again when we've been recording at these times and I can't even pull those off. So my fault, my shame, Adam Summers. I apologize.
Next one, we'll do it in the morning. I promise. We'll do it on your schedule.
Well, hey, and no bullshit, too, before I get out of here, and I know you're going to hype it up as well, too, but three count fall, no joke. The is it Substack? Is that the...
Yeah, it's adamsummers.substack.com every Friday. As of now, free. There will come a time, because it is a lot of work, and I love doing it. Don't get me wrong, but it is a lot of work. When you have a full-time job and two other podcasts and maintaining a normal human existence, it'll probably go at some point to, you know, having a couple weeks a month free, a couple weeks, you know, some sort of paywall. But yeah, as of now, every week, every Friday for free, and just me writing about all the stuff that you hear me talk about on the podcast.
Yeah, plus some stuff that, you know, we don't get a chance sometimes to come in on the podcast and really give it some shine. You get a chance to do that. And again, I appreciate it. That's for damn sure, because you know what my schedule is like, and trying to keep up with things is not the easiest. And no bullshit, whether you're just starting out with trying to figure out what's happening in Japan or have been in it for a long time and want a little bit more depth and analysis. You got it, my man. And I appreciate what you're doing. And everybody should be signed up for it. If they're not, shame on you, you fools. So get on it.
I appreciate that. That means a lot, Mike, as you were, you know, one of the gateways into me doing all this to begin with, much less us doing a podcast together for the last going on 16 years. Yeah, actually, I believe I think March 3rd of 2006 that this podcast started. We are now, I guess that's 16 years going into our 17th year, if I'm doing Brian Alvarez / Scott Steiner math correctly.
Wow.
And there you go. I'll leave that with you. I'll leave you with that, I should say, as you leave. And maybe hopefully you'll still come back next time after knowing we've been doing this for this long and are thus that old.
Really? Hey, you tell Jeremy to make sure he gets his hand on that rope, because we only do this the right way here on this podcast.
Yes.
I'm stretching. I'm reaching. I'm clawing. I'm grabbing right now. I just kicked off Dennis Condrey. I'm coming for the hot tag. Here I come.
Hey, Adam.
Is that the sound of Jeremy Deamer making the hot tag from Mike Sempervivi into the Big Audio Nightmare? Has it finally happened?
Oh, it's finally happened. And thanks for having me on for a special episode. I assume I'm here to help you with the complete oral history of the House of Tortures run in New Japan.
Yes, you and I are both such huge fans of the House of Torture. I figured no one else needs to discuss the finer points of Dick Togo's run in New Japan than you with me. But no, if people obviously have been listening, Mike had a tired. He couldn't do the rest of the show. Don't know how much he did or didn't see of the New Japan Cup. Totally understandable. So, Jeremy,
hardest working man here.
Yes, yes. Working being the operative word. But Jeremy, my close, longtime personal friend, co-host for the Wrestling at Random podcast, fellow 11th row attendee at Madison Square Garden for the New Japan Ring of Honor show with myself, Mike Sempervivi, Dennis Gorman, and a host of others. You're here to help carry the load and talk about the New Japan Cup because it was actually kind of really good.
It was really good. It was so much fun, especially coming, these matches were coming after that Zack Sabre Jr. Will Ospreay match.
Yes, which, the quarterfinal.
The quarterfinal was so good. And looking at, how the semis were laid out into the final, we've got a lot to talk about. So let me ask you, Adam.
Yes.
Which of the semifinal matches were you most looking forward to? And did it meet your expectations?
Yeah, I would say Zack Sabre Jr. and Shingo Takagi for sure. And I think part of it is just going back to what you mentioned, the quarterfinal, ZSJ and Will Ospreay, which we haven't talked about yet on this podcast. We won't belabor the point because we are sticklers for time on Wrestling at Random. And we're going to do our best to do that here in the segment of the Big Audio Nightmare. But coming out of that match, which was just out of this world, just in terms of the chemistry between both guys, top two British wrestlers in the world. I don't think anyone could argue any different for the last several years, but completely different styles, particularly more and more as time has gone on. They mesh so well together, though, as Chris Charlton always points out, the Tanahashi and Okada of the British wrestling scene, making their names mostly in Japan more than anything. So coming out of that incredible match with that interesting finish, I don't know what you thought about that with Zack Sabre Jr. getting the submission on Will Ospreay, but Will Ospreay complaining about it, saying he wasn't tapping, he was hammer fisting to get out. And that calling back to the Sonata Will Ospreay finish where Red Shoes waited too late to call it. Thought that was some interesting, almost MMA style storytelling from New Japan there. But all that heading into seeing then Zack Sabre Jr. wrestle Shingo Takagi, that was the one I was looking forward to the most, particularly. I don't know how to say this because it's going to make it sound like I wasn't looking forward to Naito versus Okada, which I was, but we just saw that last month.
Exactly. I thought
it was very good. I don't think it was, a match of the year contender or even a New Japan match of the year contender. So, yeah, I mean, as far as the going into it, who would win? The booking was very interesting for Naito versus Okada because, you had just had Okada beat Naito, but then if Naito beats Okada, that in theory means in the next couple of months, we're going to get yet another Naito Okada match. So it was a little bit hard to read where they're going with that going in.
Yeah. And myself personally, I had fantasy booked Jeff Cobb into the finals.
Yes.
But I was willing to accept Naito in this spot because if I was going to get this Naito, I'm in because this was a resurgent Naito here. He looked healthier and
healthier. The is very important with Naito at this point, but yes.
Yeah, so it was it was a good run here, and there is no way that Okada and Naito were gonna have a bad match.
I was
definitely more intrigued, I'd say, by the ZSJ Shingo match. Shingo coming off the win over Hiromu. And
another great match. It tells you how great Zack Sabre Jr. and Will Ospreay was on the 21st that Shingo and Hiromu were overshadowed. That's almost impossible. And they had a great match, but ZSJ Ospreay was somehow even better.
They did. I know you and I are both waiting. We know it will happen when Hiromu will get the big junior heavyweight breaking the glass ceiling push and,
and
hopefully have that main event heavyweight match. But this was not it.
It has to happen. And we know with the pandemic, a lot of long-term plans have been scuttled. But still, usually when a wrestler goes really hard on saying that, you know, they have a goal for somewhere down the line at Wrestle Kingdom, it almost always happens. And for the past several years, the story, that ceiling that Hiromu has been trying to break through has been main eventing Wrestle Kingdom, you know, either in a junior heavyweight title match and or a title, I guess it wouldn't be title versus title, but champion versus champion challenging for the IWGP heavyweight or now world heavyweight title while still the junior heavyweight champion. So I think we'll get there. And, you know, even without him beating Shingo here, we had another New Japan Cup where he defeated, you know, several heavyweights, you know, including Evil and Minoru Suzuki. So it's coming. I mean, they're laying the groundwork. Unfortunately, we're going to have Hiromu versus Evil coming up on the next tour before then. We'll get to that momentarily. but yeah, it has to happen.
Let's talk about Shingo and Zack Sabre Jr. in the semifinals. Kevin Kelly talking about how the central nervous system responds to an injury like the neck injury Shingo suffered at the hands of Chase Owens earlier in the tournament, laying the groundwork for the story of Zack working the neck and the arm so that he could also do his slick transitions from one submission to another.
Never more than 3 to 5 seconds in a submission. You always have to transition. It's actually something that, going back to our podcast, Wrestling at Random, think about that show we did on the bonus content feed talking about World of Sport recently. And, you know, some of the submission game there, you can draw a through line to Zack Sabre Jr. and how you describe that.
Yeah, and I think this match, you know, lived up to most of the hype, I think, that we had into it. This was great. We had a lot of fun submission holds. That sliding lariat from Shingo that got countered into a submission with pinning the arms behind his back. That was real smooth, real slick. I did love the, you know, towards it was all submissions building up to the end where no submission attempts. All big moves and near falls until Shingo goes for that last of the dragon. Zack puts on the triangle, and then we go right into the finish. The sleeper choking him out, and wow, just even Shingo not being able to break it, Zack holding on, and he just collapses. He's out. ZSJ to the finals. I thought this was a great match.
Oh, it was fantastic. And that finishing sequence, that finishing stretch, which was rather lengthy, but I don't say that in a negative way. You had Zach
drama. It built the drama in that way.
Absolutely. You had Zach with the rear naked choke and Shingo trying all these different ways desperately to get out, culminating in him going to the top rope with Zach on his back, jumping off the top rope, falling backwards to the mat, and Zach briefly almost letting go, but being able to keep the hold on. Zach holds on, flattens him out. Again, MMA style, you've got the hooks in from the back, you use the legs to flatten the guy out, and then gets the immediate rear naked choke submission. It was great, and it's something that we'll get into more as we talk about the final. The thing that makes Zack Sabre Jr. maybe the most exciting wrestler in the world, definitely the most exciting wrestler in Japan, just when it comes to matches and the potential for finishes, is that everything he does is a legitimate potential finish, whether it be any number of the combination of roll-ups, cradles, pinning combinations that he has, or all these different submissions that he uses, to the point to where he basically has to make up names for these submissions after the fact, including Selected Technical Works Volume 2, defeating Will Ospreay in the quarterfinal. So the fact that he has so many ways to win, it keeps the matches from just feeling like it's a race to whoever hits the finisher first, which for as great as New Japan has been for the past decade, and, you know, industry leader when it comes to great matches, sometimes if you watch a lot of it, it's you find it hard to get into anything up until the last couple of minutes, just because you know, okay, well, Shingo's hitting the Made in Japan, but that's not going to be the finish. It's going to be the Last of the Dragon, you know, or he hits the Pumping Bomber, but unless he's against, you know, a junior heavyweight or a young lion, that's not going to be the finish. So to me, that really separates Zack Sabre Jr. from just about everybody.
Yeah, and they actually let him beat guys out of nowhere, like the Great Okan finish earlier in the tournament with the armbar. And so you've got a lot of – he can get a submission from any position, any time, and you've seen him win with it. So
and then he has actual – you know, he has moves he can win with, most notably the Zach driver, the Michinoku driver.
Which we'll get to in the finals here in
absolutely.
A moment.
Absolutely. To me, that's one of the more interesting things, just as another quick aside on Zach Sabre, it's how – he's really expanded his repertoire in some subtle ways. You know, it was, you know, for the longest time, it was he's going to beat you with a submission. He's, you know, he almost doesn't really do any straight wrestling moves, whereas now we see him with the Zach driver, which he's been using for the last couple of years. He has that that sort of counter rebounding tornado DDT out of the corner. He's been using that that drop kick to the back of the head with a seated opponent, which is something that really only over the last couple tours he started to use. So, you know, it's not only physically he's evolving, he's added more size, which makes him look more credible in there with heavyweights. He's really, you know, like I said, rounding into one of the best wrestlers in the world, if not the best wrestler in the world.
I'm glad you mentioned the size he put on, as both Kevin Kelly and Chris Charlton were both mentioning it, and it was noticeable. A guy with a frame like Zach putting on just that amount of weight, it's not noticeable on a lot of guys. It's noticeable on Zack Sabre, and it filled him out, and it makes him look a lot more credible. I mean,
and it hasn't slowed him down at all.
No, absolutely not. So it's great to see. He looked like $1 million, wrestled like $1 million. As we wait for his opponent, of course, it was the Naito Okada match we talked about, and this was great. What a tournament for Naito. And just, you know, this is classic Okada, where the last 5 minutes are going to be great.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You're guaranteed a great finishing sequence with Okada and almost anybody, and particularly in there with Tetsuya Naito. The thing, you know, again, going back to what we were talking about with Zack Sabre Jr. and his ability to win with almost anything, in some ways, that was also the story here with Tetsuya Naito throughout this tournament, where he really never hit the actual Destino clean. He'd hit the running version, which never gets a fall. Kevin Kelly buys it on commentary, but nobody else ever does, and rightfully so. But he never hit the full Destino clean. Instead, he won with different roll-ups in almost every match that he had, particularly the Polvo de Estrella, which is his kind of modified crucifix-style roll-up, jackknife hold on Hiroshi Tanahashi in round 3. Going all the way back to the start of the tournament. So him establishing those moves throughout the New Japan Cup also played into the things I said earlier. I do want to mention, though, he didn't need to use a flash pin on Wato. He just killed him with a Rainmaker. That match was hilarious, by the way. If you haven't, if you're listening and you haven't seen that yet, you need to watch it, because It was not a great match, but it was by design. It was a masterful performance by Okada in giving Wato just enough, as I hold my fingers up to show the smallest amount possible, that he wasn't treating him like a young lion, but no more than that at all. And he just, storyline-wise, character-wise, he did not take this match seriously, and he faced no repercussions for not doing so. He soundly defeated the man. So that was the beginning of the journey. Here, the end of the journey, as far as making it to the final, was Naito defeating Okada in just under 28 minutes. So this went a good 8 or 9 minutes longer than the ZSJ Shingo match. But yeah, Naito through, avenging the loss from a month earlier. And you would have to think, as I was when I was watching this, that regardless of whether Naito would go on to beat Zack Sabre Jr. in the final, he has to be in line for another IWGP title shot, which we've seen a lot of times that happen, where the New Japan Cup winner gets the title shot in April. And then shortly thereafter, within the next month or two, the runner up from the tournament also gets a title shot.
Yes, setting up the next set of challengers the next few months makes a ton of sense. To send Naito through to the finals, I did want to note the crowd here for both these semifinals and the finals. Doing the best they can with the situation that they have. But I did laugh when I could the fans that couldn't cheer would not have made any noise anyway when Okada puts the money clip on Naito.
No, the money clip was don't let anyone revisionist history. The money clip was not over as a finish or potential finish, no matter how hard they and Naito's balloons tried to make it pre-pandemic. And yeah, I don't think there was a big pop waiting there for that. But no, to your point, the crowd was, again, by pandemic era standards, the crowd reactions were great here. They were oohing and aahing more than usual. You had a few times where you hear a few people yelling out. I think one of the matches was Sho going after El Desperado. I think it might have been on the it was either the first or second night. I can't remember which, but the crowd was like, there were people yelling like, go home, like it was Taichi 5 years ago. So that was that was amusing. We should mention briefly also, and I touched on it a little bit with Mike earlier on, the crowd size for these two shows. Osaka Joe Hall, huge building, and obviously pandemic times are different, but not a great crowd at all, particularly on the first night, just over 2,000 fans. And then the final night, just under 3,000 fans. It looked a lot more full because you had some people in that second level and they're able to darken off the rest. But just another, you know, sort of example of where we're at, both in terms of the pandemic continuing, but also still, you know, New Japan lagging a little bit. I refuse to believe and 100% allow a company to make that as an excuse for why attendance is really off. Because yeah, you're obviously way off where you were pre-pandemic, but you're off where you were in last year during the pandemic. And as I said it earlier on in the show, and I'll keep saying it, when you've got a company like Stardom drawing the biggest crowds they ever have and continuing to, you know, to just build and build and build and draw bigger crowds back to back nights in Sumo Hall than New Japan did here in Osaka Joe Hall on the same day, you know, I don't know that that's an excuse everybody should be able to use. So anyway, I've stepped off the soapbox and we can move on to the final night.
100% agree. I mean that their booking put them in this situation, and yeah, and you can see, yeah, with the success of Stardom, what a well-booked show can do.
Yeah, it's possible. It's possible to build and grow during this time period. And yes, the ceiling on that growth is lower than it would be if there's no pandemic. I mean, I don't think it's impossible to believe that no pandemic and maybe Stardom draws between 4,000 and 5,000 for those two shows last weekend. But it's still growth. You're not doomed to just continually drop throughout the pandemic in attendance, regardless of what, some people would have you believe. You know, Pro Wrestling Noah is another podcast we could do about the travails there. We'll save that for
that's a future podcast.
We'll now save that for another time. I do want to mention, I know we're going to go on to the final, Jeremy, but we do have to talk about a few things that happened on the final night. First off, coming out of the third from the top match, I don't know how you feel about this. Actually, I do know how you feel about it. We're looking at, on the next big show, we've got both Hiromu Takahashi in there. He's going to be in there with Evil. And then we've also got El Desperado is going to be in there with Sho coming up on April 9th, which, you know, I always talk about how it really, my excitement level for New Japan shows is entirely dependent on how prominently featured House of Torture are going to be. And as great as this New Japan Cup was, it's frustrating that we're going to be going into a show on the 9th where you're going to have maybe two of, if not the two most exciting wrestlers in the company, that being Hiromu and El Desperado, stuck in there in House of Torture matches.
Yeah, and it's not even like injecting them will make it better, because we know how it ends. We know what's going to happen, and it's going to feel like a waste. And yeah, it's, yeah.
Well, it feels like a waste. That's the exact way to put it, because you're going to sit through 18, 20, 25 minutes of action where you know that whatever the ultimate finish is going to be, which is either a groan-inducing House of Torture win with a ton of interference or their opponents coming away with a win after overcoming all the interference, that's the only way the matches can end. So nothing that happens up until that first ref bump matters at all. And so it's, you know, it's just, I always have to mention how frustrating it is that, you know,
like, it is absolutely
that we've got show versus El Desperado should be a match that should be super exciting. The idea of Evil versus Hiromu Takahashi in a high profile singles match a couple years ago, people would be salivating over that. And now, you know, quite honestly, if I wasn't doing this podcast or writing Three Count Fall, I would fast forward to the end of those matches. I wouldn't sit through and watch it all. And that's a shame.
I hope every single one of you listening right now is a subscriber to Three Count Fall, Adam's fantastic newsletter where he recaps all the happenings going on in Japan, all the major matches, news, everything you need to know, written in one of the best newsletters around. Make sure you subscribe for free. All of that's available, of course, at the social media accounts of Adam at the band. So let's move on to the finals. We had Naito, Zack Sabre Jr., and this final was so much fun. I loved the story with Zack and favoring his ribs, the wrecked knees of Naito finally breaking down at the end of the tournament, and just a great match. The only thing I had trouble watching was my leg hurt looking at that bruise on the inside of ZSJ's thigh. Ouch.
I wish you would have kept that piece of tape on. Yes. That was on in the semifinals. I thought maybe he had a waxing or shaving cut, and that's why it was covered up. But no, that was a nasty, nasty bruise. I have no idea how or where he could have gotten that. But yeah, that was not good. This match, though, was great. And you know, a guy has had a great tournament when you're running down, like, okay, at the end of the whole deal, what were the best matches? And in the end, what you're trying to figure out is which Zack Sabre Jr. match was the match of the tournament. And you could go with any of the last three, really would be in that mix.
If your goal was to showcase Zack Sabre Jr., your goal was to strap a rocket to him and make him feel like he could win the IWGP Championship, mission accomplished. Job well done. You couldn't have done it any better. Zack Sabre Jr. Finishes this tournament, and you can't help but say, especially after, you know, the performance in all of those matches you just mentioned, that, yeah, how is he not one of the best wrestlers in the world right now?
Yeah, 100%. And beyond that, also, coming away for this tournament, like, coming into it, I should say, I thought there was no chance that whoever was going to win this tournament was going to beat Okada. That the whole idea of this entire 50th anniversary year is the year of coronating Okada as, you know, the king of New Japan. You know, over the past 50 years, he's the guy that stands out above all else, as Kevin Kelly calls him, the next level's next level. Coming out of this, though, and the performance of Zack Sabre Jr. and the way he was positioned, and when you couple that with the fact that he is one of six men that were chosen to be in the 50th anniversary match for New Japan Pro Wrestling, you know, a match that included Tanahashi, Okada, Katsumi Fujinami, Yoshiaki Fujiwara, all these guys, Okada, obviously, that Zack Sabre Jr. was the sixth guy in that match, you know, that he was also the guy entrusted to be in Shibata's first in-ring competition of any kind since he overcame his injuries to whatever extent he has. I wouldn't fall over shocked, and I'm not saying I'm expecting it, but I wouldn't fall over shocked at this point if Zack Sabre Jr. got a short reign with the title. If he beats Okada, you know, maybe drops it right back to Okada, but sort of cements himself in that IWGP World Heavyweight title legacy.
Yeah, it's something going into this tournament, sounds like a stretch. But yeah, Coming out of it, no, absolutely, you could make a case for it. You could absolutely do that. And looking at, you know, this performance here, you had The people were into it, right? So, like, could he be a champion? Could the people buy it? The people were into Naito big here. They yes. wanted Naito to win this match. The at one point, Naito goes for the Destino, gets countered with a kick to the bad knee. Destino gets countered again into the Zach Driver for a near fall, and this place was nuts. And we're at the 20-minute mark. It gets announced 20 minutes. I felt like I've been watching a match for 5 to 10 minutes.
Yeah, it absolutely flew by, which, again, particularly in sometimes the New Japan big match style where you have, some mat work that doesn't necessarily lead to a lot early. This you never feel that way when you're watching a Zack Sabre Jr. match for all the reasons that we talked about. Going back to the rib injury that he was selling.
Yes.
If that wasn't a legitimate injury, it was one of the best sell jobs I've ever seen in my life. If that wasn't, if it was a legitimate injury, Jesus Christ, how did he power through and have the performance that he did here? Either way, 5 stars for that from DSJ.
He's favoring the ribs. He's trying to pretend like the ribs aren't bothering him.
Yes.
Which is my favorite kind of selling. And then, of course, Zach, he's got labored breathing later in the match, pointed out by the commentators, and it's adding the extra drama of Zach with the labored breathing trying to get through this. Yeah, absolutely, just a fantastic job. Thanks for tuning in to the Zack Sabre Jr. Fan Club podcast. But yeah, we're here to talk about just a masterful job, and of course the match finishing sequence, tornado DDT, it holds the neck, Zack Driver for the pin, and he wins the match with a pin after running through submissions all throughout the tournament. Just a perfect way to cap it off.
Yeah, 100%. A perfect way to cap it off, and also a great way to sort of distinguish this from the New Japan Cup win that he had had several years prior, where it was 4 submissions in a row throughout the tournament that got him the win. Do you know what the name of that combination that he put together to get the win was, you know, where he hit the counter sort of rebounding tornado DDT off the second rope straight into the spinning Zach Driver? Do you know what that's called?
Do tell.
Sabre Driver, parentheses, you spin me round, techno remix, close parentheses.
I like it. Gives me good ECW vibes with everyone naming wacky moves, wacky things.
Yes. The only thing that's better than that is throughout the tournament in backstage comments, and then here in the actual post match when he won in the ring, him saying that George Michael inspired him to win this. It was the Dangerous Techers, the incredible Bloody Dangerous Techers, and George Michael that got him through.
We did get Tai Chi coming out at the end to congratulate his partner and friend.
Love the it. Most wholesome friendship in all of professional wrestling is Zack Sabre Jr. and Tai Chi. As ridiculous as that sounds, the merry band of thieves that is Suzuki-gun, and particularly here with Tai Chi and Zack Sabre Jr., it's great. I will write a letter to the editor if they ever have Tai Chi turn on Zack Sabre Jr. Those two men need to be attached at the hip for the rest of their careers, whether it's as tag team champions or whether it's, you know, each guy going for singles glory, but still, you know, the other supporting him throughout. 100% needs to continue.
We are up against time here, so I did want to close it out by asking you your thoughts on going into the tournament. I know that, you know, when I looked at this 48-man tournament, I'm like, okay, well, this is the first round is a nothing.
The word I would use to describe it would be superfluous.
There you go, because I didn't have a lot of high hopes going into the tournament.
Yeah.
You know, I was like, this is going to be, you know, I did like the concept of why not? Everybody's in because we don't have a lot of guys, so everybody's in. Okay, but it meant the early rounds were going to be not much, and the tournament went without many upsets, which is usually the exciting part of the tournament. So your thoughts overall on how they booked this tournament.
Yeah, I mean, the closest thing to an upset, you know, really through the first 3 rounds would have been Shima defeating Hirooki Goto, which is an upset, you know, if you're looking particularly through New Japan only fans' eyes. But I wouldn't look at that as, you know, it's not like it was if Doki beat Zack Sabre Jr. or something. I wouldn't look at it that way. But yeah, I mean, outside of the incredible Okada Desperado match on the opening night of the tournament, which when we're talking about best matches, we can't leave that by the wayside. I think that's absolutely there with any of the ZSJ matches, with Shingo versus Hiromu, with Shingo versus Ishii early on in the tournament. But outside of those few, yeah, I mean, the shows were filled with the likes of Hirooki Goto versus Dick Togo, or, you know, Hiroshi Tanahashi versus Bad Luck Fale. There weren't too many matches I really thought that over-delivered. Maybe the only one that I thought really, and I don't know why I didn't think it would be great. It's not like I thought it would be bad, but Cobb versus Yoshihashi from relatively early on in the tournament was a fantastic match that in some ways they missed. This was in the third round, Zip Arena Okayama. In some ways, they missed a golden opportunity to give Yoshihashi a win there because the people were behind him. They were feeling it. It would have been a great moment if he got the win. But yeah, they kind of sacrificed the early rounds by having it be such a big tournament and not having any upsets. But when you got to the third round, and particularly the semifinals, even really the third round or the quarterfinals, I should say, from the quarterfinals on, because it was Naito Cobb, Okada Shima, Shingo Hiromu, Zack Sabre Jr., Ospreay. Those were the four quarters, and then we went into the semis, which we talked about. All of those matches were very good to great. And anytime you have a single elimination tournament, which you can say that about, from that long on, from the final eight, everything's great. You know, it's a good thing. This to me was in some ways the most New Japan that New Japan has felt like in the past couple of years. But we'll see if that holds up with all the House of Torture stuff coming up on the 9th. Obviously, Okada versus ESJ in the main event. Some sort of wacky stipulation, either a drinking match or a sumo match between Yano and Taichi, and what else happens there. And also, as we close this out, what we get in Chicago, as you and I will be front row in beautiful suburban Chicago at the Odeon, what we'll get on that show.
I want Minoru Suzuki and Ishii at that show.
I'm
willing it to happen.
I think there's a good chance it's going to happen. I was texting you after all these tag matches, these opening early tag matches on these shows where Ishii and Suzuki were going at it. They're both going to be in the U.S. They don't have anything booked for the 16th. Charlton and Chris, and Kevin Kelly, not Chris Kelly, not an Ottawa Senators player on the call. Kevin Kelly were saying how this match might be too violent for Japan. They might need to do it in the United States. I think we might be getting a double main event of Ospreay versus Moxley and Ishii versus Suzuki.
I'm glad I'm sitting ringside for that show. It sounds awesome. Yeah. Hopefully we can. We'll be sure to recap that here on the Big Audio Nightmare. I do want to thank Mike Sempervivi for letting me keep the chair warm for him for this week. And I will make sure to tag him back in. And definitely thank you, Adam, for having me on to talk about like you mentioned, it. This is the first New Japan shows that felt like the New Japan I want to watch. So this was pretty exciting to get back to it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Even more than I would say the last G1 and the last Wrestle Kingdom. So let's see. Let's keep our fingers crossed that they can keep that going here into April and then into the Best of the Super Juniors. Before we go, I usually do this, but since you're here, Jeremy, tell the fine people about Wrestling at Random, how they can listen to that and how they can get even more.
What a great podcast that is. Wrestling at Random, hosted
Who are those
by,
guys that host that show? They're pretty smart.
Hosted by two handsome gentlemen, myself.
Let's not get crazy here.
And myself and Adam Summers.
One handsome gentleman and me.
We come to you every single week with a randomly chosen pro wrestling event. We put all the internet's content into the randomizer. We fire it up. It chooses a show for us to watch. We watch it every single week. At Wrestle at Random is the Twitter and Instagram. You can follow us there. Find out what show we're going to be reviewing. We post that every Thursday. And the entire back catalog of all the shows, we're deep into season 3 right now. You can get all of the content. We're talking talking ECW, WCW, NWA, WWF. We go all over the place, way off the board. Plenty of Japanese content as well. New Japan, All Japan. We're into the 80s. We're into the 90s. We've got so much good stuff there. Make sure that you find us wherever podcasts are found. Wrestling at Random. And of course, you can find the entire back catalog at the website, wrestlingatrandom.com.
Absolutely. And if you're crazy enough to want even more content, you can go over to patreon.com/wrestlingatrandom or find the bonus content through Apple Podcasts as well, where we do a second episode every week, every Thursday, which can be even more random, sometimes even more off the wall than the stuff that we have on the main feed. And we also have a tier where people can choose what they want for us to watch, which has yielded quite a few different things. Some really off the wall, not so great shows that we had fun reviewing, and also some really cool stuff that's very relevant to the interests of people listening to this podcast, including reviews of Pro Wrestling NOAH matches or All Japan Women or New Japan, just a variety of things. So make sure you check all that out. Also, as you mentioned, I appreciate both you and Mike giving a very kind plug to it. Three Count Fall, my weekly newsletter. I mentioned it earlier on in the podcast, but it bears repeating. AdamSummers.substack.com. Every single Friday, I go into even more depth than I am able to here on this podcast into what is going on across the entire Japanese landscape. My thoughts on it as someone with way too long of a period of time watching all this stuff. And yeah, it's been getting some really good feedback, and I'd love it if you would join us over there. So I think that's it. I'll let you close it out, Jeremy, since you are the guest here. I'll let you shut the door.
Thanks, everyone, for listening, and we'll talk to you again next time.